Hello, and welcome to another, dare I say, jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
What? You're not?
No. No, I'm not. We say this every week. No. Huh. But you are my favorite conservative.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so we start each show until the election for season three with the latest polling. So let's get into it. In the Real Clear Politics, that's the RCP national average, Trump versus Biden. A little bit of a change from last week. Trump was up 0.8. He is now up 0.9. So I don't think that's statistically significant at all.
Not at all.
Let's do the next part.
The part I like the best, this day in history. So we look back at the 2016 and 2020 on this particular day and where Trump was versus Biden and Hillary Clinton. So let's go back to 2020.
Okay.
On this date in 2020, Joe Biden had a 10.2 lead.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's huge. Yeah. And back to 2016. Hillary had a 5.9 lead on Donald Trump. So that Trump is even up is huge.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the battleground states. We'll start with Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. You want to take that one?
I'll take that one. Last week, Trump was up 2.3. This week, he's in the same place, 2.3. So that's a wash.
Okay. Let's go to North Carolina, which I semi-quasi-battleground state. Last week, Trump was up 5. He's up 5.3. So expanded that a little bit.
Yep. And Georgia, which is close to us. Last week, Trump was up 4. This week, he's up 5. So I think a whole point is significant.
Yeah. And Biden won Georgia last time, right?
That's
where Trump tried to, air quotes, find the votes or whatever to get a recount. Let's go to the real battleground states of Michigan. And last week, Trump was up 1.1. This week, he's up 0.2.
That's a big drop.
That's a drop. Yeah. 9-tenths of a point there. That's big.
And you know how I feel. I feel like Michigan's going to be the decider.
You do.
I do. Wisconsin, last week, Trump was up 0.1. Now he's up 0.3. Again, not a huge significant change, but you know, trending in the right direction if you like Trump.
If you're a Trumper, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, go out west.
Let's go out west to Nevada. Okay. And last week, Trump was up 5.3. This week, he's up 5.7.
Right? Same thing in Arizona. Last week, Trump was up 4.1. Now he's up 4.8. So I think these pseudo battleground states, and I'm going to say which ones I mean by that, North Carolina, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona are going to turn red totally. I think they're not really going to be battleground states this time.
It seems that way, you know, barring any significant story that comes out. And
that's true.
Wait for that to happen about a week before the election.
That's right. So we do have something coming up this week. We hope everybody will tune in. Tell us what's going on.
This Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Oh my God, is it that late?
On CNN. Yeah.
Are you sure? I thought it was 8 p.m. Eastern.
Our time. No, 9 our time.
Eight our time. Yeah, okay, never mind. I'm putting the calendar wrong.
President Biden and former President Trump will debate in Atlanta, Georgia at the CNN headquarters.
And so let's take a look at the rules, and we're going to give you our opinion on who these rules favor. Give us the first one. Well, I'll do the first one because I know you want to do the second one.
Okay.
And we see you watching live. Thank you so much. And remember, you can comment in real time, I think, on most channels. Well, maybe not. You can definitely on YouTube and others. Anyway, we always appreciate your comments in real time. So the first rule is it will be 90 minutes. I think that favors both of them. And here's why. Because Biden needs as little time as possible. Actually, it probably favors Trump more. Did you just say correct?
Correct. Yeah. Biden wants this 20 minutes.
That's true. But I think it also favors Trump, definitely. And it hurts Biden, you're right. But it could be longer than 90 minutes. It could be much longer.
Yeah. And trust me, they won't go into overtime on this.
No. All right. Give us another rule.
The moderators, this isn't a rule, but the moderators are Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. So basically, you have a 3-on-1 debate with Joe Biden being the third.
So that favors Biden.
It will. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Trump's going into hostile territory.
Yes. Okay. candidates will be standing. Yes. Now, I thought that they agreed to sitting.
There was talk, and then, of course, the White House said that was fake news or something, and they will be standing.
Yes. That definitely favors Trump.
It will. I wonder if they're going to have, like, grips, like little handles like you have in the bathroom for old people to hold on.
Oh, they will.
To the podium.
Yeah, they will. That definitely favors Trump.
Good. Yeah.
All right. Next one.
The debate will feature two commercial breaks during the broadcast. And what's interesting with this is there's...
That's not a lot.
No, it isn't. And during that time, the candidates are not allowed to speak to their staff at all. So they cannot confer.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So that favors Trump.
Correct.
Okay. There will be no studio audience. That favors Biden.
That it does.
Absolutely. Because yeah. Trump, just I think because Trump really thrives on the energy of an audience, even if they're against him, like he thrives on that live audience. And I definitely think that hurts Trump.
Okay. Next rule, which I think is very significant. No opening statement.
That's very unusual.
It is.
And that favors Biden.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Versus I think Trump would prefer like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
And he just
it might help him too,
stream
actually.
Of consciousness. Yeah, I mean.
It could help him. It could help him.
It could, yeah.
All right.
The candidates will be given 2 minutes to respond to a question with 1 minute rebuttals and responses to rebuttals. So, and that's up to the moderators on how many times they can go back and forth.
Right.
So.
I don't know that this favors either candidate because you can be shorter if you want to.
You can. And I think that if Joe Biden does one of his where he meanders off and says, so anyway, I'm taking up too much time. I think Trump should then, when they ask Trump to respond, say, I'd like to cede my minute response to back to President Biden.
Oh,
and make him keep going.
That'd be good. That'd be good. All right. No interaction from campaign staff. You already
mentioned that during the commercial breaks. And I am hoping that
will favor Trump.
Well, but that campaign staff will be allowed to film it on their phones or whatever, because I hate to sound conspiratorial, but you need to have another verification versus what the network's going to give you.
Okay. Next one.
No use of notes. So you cannot walk in with notes or anything.
They usually allow notes.
Well, you will be given a pen or pencil a piece of paper. So you can write things down during, but you can't come in with your little, sheet.
That definitely favors Trump.
Your cheat sheet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Trump.
Absolutely.
This is my favorite one. No interrupting. Okay. Good luck. Good luck on the no interrupting on both sides. But I think no interrupting favors Trump if he can actually stick to that rule, because we know what happened the first time that Trump debated Biden 4 years ago. Trump was constantly interrupting. He came off as a bully, came off as super aggressive, and he lost that debate.
I agree, but the next one kind of dovetails into it,
okay,
where microphones will also be muted except for the candidates allotted time to speak. So Trump can try to interrupt. But when your microphone's cut,
they always say they're going to do that and never do. I hope they stick to this.
I think they will.
Okay.
I think they will. Yeah.
All right. So the next one, the moderators, and this is a quote, will use all tools at their disposal to enforce timing and ensure civilized discussion. Okay. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. How much control they can keep. Of the debate. I'm not sure. We'll find out.
Okay. So, and last?
At the end of the debate, there will be a 2-minute closing statement from each candidate.
That definitely favors Trump.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And it dovetails into our next one, which is they had a coin toss.
Okay.
And with the coin toss, just like in a football game, you can choose to receive or kick it off, whatever. Here, the choices were that you could pick which podium that you wanted.
Okay.
Left or right.
All right.
Maybe somebody's got a good side.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Or you could choose to go last in the closing statements.
Okay.
Now, Biden won the toss and elected to be, I believe, on the left podium. Now, any person that's arguing and debating always wants the last word.
Absolutely.
Always.
Yeah.
And Biden punted on that because Are they afraid that by the end of 90 minutes, he's going to be a bit, shall we say, fried?
Yeah.
I mean, or screaming and coming off as an angry old man. I don't know.
We don't know. It's get your popcorn ready. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
We're going to like have the popcorn. I'm going to have a glass of wine. You're going to have a beer and just enjoy the show. So this leads us to our main topic.
Yes. Hold on. Are we going to do a drinking game?
No, we did that 1 year and we were just hammered.
Well, that's true. But what would like the key phrase be to take a drink if we choose to do?
Are you encouraging people to do a drinking game?
Yes. Hey, you got to get through the debate, right?
That's true. You do.
It's a June debate.
I think one time when we did a drinking game, every time either candidate said the word jobs, but this was like 4 years ago, we took a drink.
I'm thinking, how about it's not a joke? No joke.
No joke.
Or my word is a Biden. That's always a good one. Or China.
Yeah. Right? China. Yeah. Okay. We got to pick one.
Fake news.
Okay. That's a good one. Yeah. Fake news.
That'll get you hammered.
Yeah. That will get you hammered. Yeah. Trump's going to say that a lot. All right. Now can we get to our main topic?
We can.
Okay. So what are we talking about today, you handsome devil?
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet of you to say.
You put that in the script.
And you read it like Ron Burgundy.
I know.
It worked.
Well, you are a handsome devil, but I don't think we need to call that out.
Oh, okay.
But just in case people are listening and not watching. Okay. So what is our main topic?
Right. Well, I think this is so important, and especially to our friends on the left and so many of the independents that watch us every week. Yeah.
Yes.
It's election interference.
Okay. And so why do you consider this so important right now? And are you expecting some sort of interference in this election?
Well, not necessarily. And a lot of times we talk about foreign interference, right? But it's important because especially for uninformed voters, we used to call them low information voters.
Yes. Right?
They need to understand what has happened over the last, say, 8 or 10 years, who was responsible for the cheating, election interference, whatever you want to call it. You know, we do not need foreign interference in our elections.
Yeah.
We seem to do pretty well interfering in our own elections.
That's true.
Illegally on our own. Yeah.
Just to be clear, we don't want election interference or cheating from anyone. No foreign actors. We mean Republicans, Democrats, everybody. We want fair and honest elections. Edward, I know you have some examples of this homegrown election interference. So what's the first example you have up for
us? Let's go back to 2016. And this is a primary interference, which of course leads to the general election, right? So it is true election interference. This was with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in 2016 when they were going into one of their debates. Now, Bernie had been gaining ground, you know.
Much to the whole Clinton cabal.
Yeah, because of Hillary's email problem.
But also Bernie had the youth vote. Bernie really
he did. The Bernie bros. Yeah,
the Bernie bros that captured the young people. I think also Bernie got a lot of independents as well.
Yeah, he did. But the interference came from Donna Brazile, who was the interim head of the DNC.
Yep.
She was a CNN contributor.
Yep.
And she sent the questions to Hillary in advance.
Before an actual debate with Bernie.
Correct.
Yes.
And if you remember, that was the first debate. That was the debate. And we talked about how Hillary's email scandal was going crazy, right?
Yep.
And Bernie, I have no idea why he did this. Remember one of the first questions was,
what he said.
They asked about Hillary's emails and Bernie said, I'm tired of talking about the damn emails. Let's move on.
It's he did her such a favor.
It's your main talking point to take down Hillary Clinton, and you punted on it right away.
Well, that's okay. Good Bernie God. Never expected to be doing as well as he did. Like, never in a million years.
I guess. But what was fascinating is it's just recently come out that Donna Brazile also gave Hillary a talking point that was going to be in an earlier debate that same year about. She sent her an email that said there's going to be a woman in the audience that has a rash and they think it's because of the polluted water in Detroit. Now, when you have that kind of information, you can sound incredible on a response, yes, right? So informed true. And everything else. And Bernie's like, what kind of rash?
You know? All right. So we're going to stay with Hillary for our next example. Yes. And I know that you think this is the biggest interference case.
No, I think this is the second biggest
interference case. Okay. And what was
of all time? We're sticking with Hillary.
All right.
Our girl.
Let's do it.
This is the Russian collusion and the Steele dossier back in 2016. So let's set it up. Hillary wins the nomination.
I'm going to say this part. Okay. So she was taking tremendous heat for her email scandal in 2016. And I remember this because I bought magnets for all my family members that said, email me with Hillary's face on them.
Right.
I thought it was funny. I did think it was funny. And I, by the way, was very pro Hillary for a very long time. So she wanted to deflect from her official emails, which were on an unsecured server in her house. And let's see, she wanted to deflect from her official emails. I'm missing this next point. Well, tell me, we're not hacked.
Well, yeah, she wanted to prove that, you know, nothing was hacked, was being used, anything like that. And that little description there doesn't do it justice. You know, we could go on for 20 minutes talking about Hillary and using servers that weren't her official government servers and deleting emails and everything else.
But so let's talk about what her campaign did.
So her campaign figures, all right, she gets cleared by James Comey on July 3rd of that year. He comes in and he says, you know, it would not be prudent. We couldn't find a prosecutor that would bring this case, even though she deleted 30,000 subpoenaed emails.
But we're going down the rabbit hole, so let's back on focus. What did her campaign do?
So after that, Hillary was still under pressure from these emails because nobody bought the Jim Comey excuse.
Right. And nobody bought, she's an incredibly smart woman, whether you like her or not. And nobody, including me, believed that she didn't know that the private server was wrong.
I shouldn't use a private server for my government emails?
Okay. Really? So again, back to what of her campaign.
So her campaign through the Perkins Coie law firm hired a former British agent. Now, British is foreign, right? So right there, you've got foreign interference. So they hire a former British spy named Christopher Steele to dig up dirt on Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He can't find anything.
Right.
So
what kind of dirt were they looking for?
Anything especially relating to Russia, because they figure we're going to start pushing this whole Russia thing because of, they were worried that her emails, that Russia had her emails or whatever. And so they thought, we're going to try to tie him to Russia.
Okay. So.
So they can't find any evidence to do so. So Christopher Steele gets with some of his old buddies in the intelligence community, some Russians themselves, and they make up this entire Steele dossier.
Right. That's what it's known as.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Steele dossier.
Named after him.
And Hillary Clinton's campaign then goes and spreads it to the intelligence community. They know it's crap, but they decide to push it also. So it was completely fabricated. It was election interference to the highest level at that point. It was off the charts that our government officials, our intelligence agency knew that this dossier was coming from the opposition camp.
Right.
And they went and push this and basically hamstring Trump for 2 years.
Oh, and convinced people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know that a recent story came out about this that you wanted to share.
Well, yeah, it's kind of fascinating. It came out just yesterday. And Kash Patel, he's been around Washington. He was the chief of staff and a bunch of other positions in the government to a guy named Congressman Devin Nunes. Kevin Nunes from Central California, the Fresno Valley area, I believe, was the head of the Intelligence Committee, a big position. He was tasked to look into the Russia collusion Steele dossier thing. So what Kash Patel just recently said is he just found out that Paul Ryan, who at that point was Speaker of the House, a Republican, had the Steele dossier for a couple of years before he informed the committee that was looking into it.
Yeah.
So this just shows you how much there is of this swamp, uniparty, whatever it takes to take down Donald Trump, damn him if he's, you know, our party or not. So just stunning.
So I want to jump here to the Mueller report,
yeah,
because this really did hound Trump throughout his presidency. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, the Mueller report, so they succumbed to Trump succumbed to the pressure, if that's the right word, but of
I don't think he had a choice.
Yeah, well, no, he did. You always have to have your Justice Department launch with a special counsel.
Right.
And they put Robert Mueller, who was a former head of the FBI back in the day, who now looks like Joe Biden does cognitively. So he,
not so much back then, but continue.
So
okay.
Anyway, he puts together this entire report, which takes a year and a half to do. And it finally comes out and there is nothing, absolutely nothing. And the silence from the media is just crickets. Gee, we got maybe the biggest story.
The media
wrong.
Doesn't correct itself
not
very
at all.
Often. Yeah,
not
I
at
mean,
all.
It really doesn't. When whatever they get wrong, right, they don't correct themselves.
That's correct. So, yeah,
right,
that was a monstrous story for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
That every single night Trump was getting pounded. Just, and I always just think as a conservative, how much more could Trump have gotten done without having to deal with this crap?
He got a lot done.
Single night. He
I
did.
Mean,
that's
I'm not a
saying.
Trump fan, but he got a lot done.
Without this kind of interference. So.
All right. So we have another example that's very current. The lawfare being waged against Trump.
Yes. Yes. Real time.
Yeah.
All these lawsuits, there's four lawsuits against Trump right now. They are being directed by the White House. And that's easily provable because you've got collusion from local prosecutors, you know, in New York and Washington. I don't think the Florida case is, though, but you have these prosecutors going to the White House to get instructions, if you will. Now, there's no reason that a prosecutor from Atlanta needs to go to the White House and spend all day there showing their Trump case.
That, right.
Zero.
Right.
You know, so this is being directed from there. Now,
yes,
probably the most damning part of this is the two cases in New York.
Yeah.
One was a real estate thing and the other was
Stormy
Daniels. Yeah. So the number three man at the Department of Justice, I can't remember his name. It's an Italian name or whatever. He resigns his number three position at the Justice Department,
yeah,
which is probably as high as you might go in your career, to take an assistant prosecutor job at the Southern District in New York to coordinate the lawsuits against Trump. So somebody from the DOJ, which Biden oversees,
yes,
that is under Biden's jurisdiction, under his watch or his control,
yes,
sends a man to resign his career there and go take an assistant prosecutor job to do these. It's just stunning.
Well, and then you also have that, I don't know if it's Fannie or Fonnie Willis in Georgia. She sent her boyfriend, first of all, she hired a boyfriend, but she sent her boyfriend to the White House to coordinate with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And they know this because of all the billing records that are there. He billed actually for 24 hours of work in one day. He worked nonstop around the clock, baby. So, yeah. But yeah. So if you do not believe that this is being pushed by the Biden administration and the DOJ, which is the same thing, you're fooling yourself. And that is absolutely 100% election interference by trying to convict your opponent of a crime.
And all it's doing, by the way, is helping Trump raise money.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's boatloads of money.
Yes.
Yeah.
The more convictions, the more money he raises.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
All right. And then the last example of election interference is the Hunter Biden laptop.
Ooh, the granddaddy of them all.
This is actually
I'm going to reference a story from our good friend Greg Salisbury at the American Thinker.
Okay.
And he writes, during the 2020 debate, President Trump pointed to the information found, and he's questioning, this should be a question to Biden.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
President Trump pointed to the information found on your son's laptop and claimed it incriminated both you and Hunter. He called you corrupt. You answered that President Trump's assertions were, quote, a bunch of garbage, and referenced an open letter from 51 retired intelligence officers who said the laptop should not be taken seriously and had all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation.
Right. So subsequently, what happened, still from the article, the Wall Street Journal and others reported that not only was the laptop genuine, I mean, did anyone have doubts? I didn't. But your own campaign advisor at the time, so Biden's campaign advisor, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, orchestrated creating and publicizing that false letter.
Yeah. Let's not gloss that over because so Biden, you know, this laptop gets released.
Yes. Four years ago.
And they start scrambling. What do we do?
Yeah.
Biden has an advisor by the name of Anthony Blinken who says, I'll handle this. He goes, gets all these people to sign this letter, which we now know is completely false. And he then gets rewarded as to be Secretary of State.
Nice.
Stunning.
And this is really interesting. So Technometrica, they are recognized, according to this writer, as the most accurate pollster in recent presidential elections, found that 79% of Americans believe Donald Trump would likely have been president if the truth about the laptop being real had been known.
Yeah, that's a stunning number.
Yeah,
that really is. I think this will go down. God, I hope there's not a bigger story than this, you know, over the years as one of the biggest cases of election interference. Now, with AI coming, I think.
Who knows?
Who the hell knows? Yeah, all the rules are off. But what happened, you know, remember, so Biden's campaign orchestrated that letter.
Right.
They then went, not only did they push that line out there that all these former intelligence agencies thought that this was Russian disinformation. They then went to all the social media companies that are out there and banned anyone from even talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, Twitter, Facebook, everything else, Google. And you want to?
Yeah, the FBI orchestrated a campaign. It began in early 2020 by reaching out to social media companies saying that there would probably be an attempt by Russia to interfere in the election in the form of something about Biden and his son. So they set it up really early. And the FBI in court documents recently admitted that the laptop was real. It was verified to be Hunter Biden's on December 13th, 2019.
Think about that. That's 11 months before the election.
Yes. December 2019, they knew that the laptop was real. And again, I can't believe people didn't think it was real, but never mind. I shouldn't be judgmental. But they knew the laptop was Hunter's. It was real. And they pushed a completely different narrative.
Well, yeah. And they had secret meetings with all these social media companies. First, they were monthly. They started out. And then they became weekly, where every week they would go in and say, be careful. We think there's going to be some Russian interference. It probably has to do with Joe Biden and his family. You shouldn't believe it. Now, all the while, they know what they have verified themselves. You want to talk about election interference? Good Lord have mercy.
Yeah. And I will put this out there. I'm not sure Trump would have gotten elected if it was just, this is my son's laptop. And, you know, Biden could have really tried to distance himself from his son. His son's, you know, known drug addict. He could say, oh, he's lying about everything, whatever. But it's this extra layer of covering it up. Extra layer of reaching out to tech companies who run social media channels saying, you know, push this narrative. There's that whole extra layer there. That's the problem.
Yeah. And what I think would have been a good strategy was what would be kind of what you just said, where admit that it's his.
Yeah. He,
you know, he's a degenerate. I think everybody knows.
Yeah.
That,
just
right?
Admit it's his.
It was so close to the election. There would not have been time to go through. There were tens of thousands of emails, and it's taken months and years now actually go through all of these and connect all these shell companies and everything else that are all in there.
I think he could have come out and
he could have just said, you know,
it's my son's laptop.
I love my son. He always does that. Like, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
And then just say, we're working with him on it. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, they went full misinformation, you know, as being the party that, you know, tries to warn you about misinformation, right?
Yes.
There's full projection right there. So, yeah.
All right, this week we don't have a This Week in Wins. So if there's something especially positive this week that you want to share in the comments, please, we will feature it in real time. We see you watching live and really appreciate it. We do, however, I think you're doing this one, right? Yes, you're doing this one. We do have it this week in What the Fuck, I'll say it since I'm
done. What the Frick?
Yeah, yes. Really?
That's okay. Me.
All right. So, Edward, what is This Week in
WTF? Sure. Well, let's go to our good friend, Matt Vespa, over at Town Hall. Okay. Great site. Great site. They're a sister of Red State, by the way. Town Hall is. Yeah.
Okay.
So, headline. After this failed program, does anything work in Joe Biden's America? From the article, it says 3 years ago, Biden rolled out the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, also known as BEAD.
Good acronym. Let me give him that.
It is, but here's a warning. Anytime you see the word equity in a program, run.
Okay.
Remember the word equality? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this new BEAD allocating $42.5 billion to bring high-speed internet access to rural America. Not a single home has been connected to the network as of yet. And it's a hodgepodge of government bureaucracy, red tape, and other aspects of Washington that perfectly illustrates why this is a classic tale of government action, air quotes action, I think, right?
Yes.
So here's some of the
reasons it didn't work.
Well, it's still in progress. So, okay. You know, they're trying to get it through. So there has to be in the guidelines a preference for hiring union workers who are scarce in some rural areas, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, so they want you to join a union to try to work on this. They are requiring providers to prioritize, quote, certain segments of the workforce, such as individuals with past criminal records.
So, okay.
So you got to reach out and try to find criminals, right?
To former hire criminals. Them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the underserved.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
They also need requiring eligible entities to account not only for current climate-related risk, but also how the frequency, severity, and nature of these extreme events may plausibly evolve as our climate continues to change over the coming decades. So you've got people who are trying to install broadband around the country.
Right.
And you are requiring them to do a study to show how broadband is going to affect the climate. Now, what do those people know about it, right?
Yeah.
Nothing. Right? So what do they have to do? Hire consultants, these climate consulting companies. Boy, there's a scam I want to be involved with, and which is going to take years. So anyway, the project's now expected to be completed in 2031, which is 5 years after the initial date. I will take the over on that. 2031, I'm going to say 2041, maybe.
It could be like the bullet train in California.
Yeah.
It still hasn't happened.
No, they've extended that 30 years.
Yeah,
right?
It's like a boondoggle.
So.
Okay, all right. So my favorite segment, we like to end on a positive note. This Week in Woke. It's from our good friend, Matthew Sedaka at the New York Post.
Love the Post.
Yeah. And this is a great headline. Exposure to loud aircraft noises could lead to obesity. Okay. yeah, I don't even know.
Doesn't lead to obesity?
Is borderline in WTF, by the way. Okay. So regular exposure to loud aircraft noise could be linked to obesity, according to a new study. So Boston University and Oregon State University researchers wrote in a recent Environment International paper that nurses living near airports nationwide who endured plane noise 45 decibels or greater were 5% more likely to be obese. Okay, so we got nurses, they live near airports, and if they had to endure 45 decibels or greater, 5% more likely to be obese. Odd. Okay, so they continue. The risk of obesity increased with louder noises. At 55 decibels or greater, people were 11% more likely to have an obese level body mass index, or BMI. Okay, so this is what we call correlative, not causative. There's no way to prove this, but let's continue. So prior research has shown that aircraft noise can elevate stress responses and disturb sleep, but there has been mixed evidence of any links with body mass index. This is from Dr. Matthew Bozagar, maybe, assistant professor of epidemiology at OSU and the lead study author. So he literally said, one of the study authors said, yes, aircraft noise can elevate stress, it can disturb sleep, but there's no real evidence that it's linked to BMI or body mass index.
So the lead author,
of the study says,
never mind.
Yes. I do not understand. Like, I just don't understand stuff like this. Can we just talk about the reality that obesity can lead to 13 different kinds of cancer? I mean, we all know that's sort of my platform and I'm passionate about it, but like, but living near an airport?
Yes. Well,
and nurses.
Yes.
Nurses,
I was going to say nurses living near an airport.
Well, and nurses have stressful jobs anyway. So if they're saying the stress, anyway, I can't.
Are firemen? Are they more of these?
I don't know.
Are donut makers? You know, right? Let's choose nurses, right?
Yeah, it's very odd. It's very strange.
Okay, so, diet and exercise. There you go.
So many will argue it's not as simple as that, and that's fine, but just...
It never hurts.
It doesn't hurt, but just this whole idea that exposure to loud aircraft noises could lead to obesity, yes.
Well, I think the bigger picture here is another excuse for the body positivity movement, right? That any size is a good size.
And not when the lead study author changes his mind.
Well, he just said, we're not quite sure, but I'm going to put this out anyway because I want to be published, right? So, but yeah, it's any excuse that you can have that something is not your fault. That I hear planes and there's a decibel level, which causes me stress. So what do I have to do? I have to eat. Well, no, you don't.
All I can say is I used to live right next to the Burbank Airport, like right in the flight path of the Burbank Airport. Also, right, literally on the on-ramp of the 5 freeway, right across from it. So anytime a semi was on Interstate 5, which was all the time, the house would shake. That's how close we were to the freeway. And we always heard planes, except during that spooky week during post 9/11. And yeah.
Did you gain like 50 pounds?
I did not. Huh. And after a certain amount of time, you just tune it out. Yeah. Like you really do. You start to tune it out.
I mean, we hear trains here, right? First moved here, there's trains probably a mile away, but they're still in the middle of the night.
1:30.
We don't even hear them.
You know, I do sometimes. I do.
You hear everything.
I do. But all right. So thank you so much for joining us today, especially we see you watching live. Thank you.
Thank you.
For this week's topic on election interference, please follow us on all social media platforms. And we will be back live next Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. And we are really starting to notice an uptick in Rumble views. So thank
you. Go Rumble.
Yeah. Thank you so much for following us there. If you're listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast available wherever you're listening right now. And again, if you want to reach out to us, you want to email us, just go to myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show.
All right. Now we will be doing a post-debate recap.
Yes, next week we'll.
Please let us know if anybody out there is going to be doing a drinking game and what the key phrase is. We'd love to hear that one. That'll be fun. But yeah,
we are not doing a drinking game during this debate, you and I.
All right.
Yeah, no, we're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you and have a great day.